Manx Radio's 2016 election coverage.
A very good evening and welcome to you. I'm John Moss. Our coverage of the 2016 general election continues this evening with a candidate for the newly enlarged constituency of Glenfarber, Glenfaber, Glenfarber, whatever you want to call it, and Peel. We'll be chatting for 25 minutes to Geoffrey Boot, the present MHK for Glenfarber. Good evening to you, Mr. Boot.
Good
Thanks
evening,
for joining us.
John from Glenfaber.
He's 62, married, four children, describes himself as having no affiliation, but conservative with a small c by inclination. The next 5 years, isn't that time for someone who is conservative with a large c? Isn't it time for some bold decisions as well during that time? Can you afford to be conservative with a small c?
I agree. Manx politics are a strange thing. If you look at the mix of members at the moment, they tend to be fairly left of centre, but the policies that come out seem to be fairly right of centre. And you're probably right. There's time for someone to make some hard decisions.
Are you right? Are you a rightist? You are. You do give the impression of being.
I would say conservative with a small c, because I do have some socialist
but
principles.
But leanings to
me,
the right.
But
are.
I lean to the right. I know capitalism. Benevolent capitalism is probably where I'm at.
And you don't think that's a bad thing? You think that's good for the island?
I think it's probably good for the island. I think it seems to be good for the UK. And if you look at economies elsewhere in Europe, where they have what I call socialism, like France and Spain, they're not exactly succeeding very well at the moment.
Well, you've been in MHK for a short period, 10 and a half, 11 months, something like that, representing Glenfarber. You got in with a very small majority, of course, one of the smallest of all time, I think three. It must have been a nerve-wracking time for you in the election night.
Election night was interesting, to say the least.
But have you been able to impress those who were obviously looking elsewhere for representation during that time? Do you think the three has swelled during your 11 months?
I think so, and I hope so. I've nearly completed a canvas of Glenfarber and spoken to a lot of people that supported my opponent at the last election, and I think some of them are now on side. They realise that I'm producing what I said I would do, and I think as two candidates we were not dissimilar, and we fought a fairly clean campaign. There was no nastiness involved, so there's no residue of distrust or dislike that I detect anyway.
Have you gone into Peel?
Yes, I started. I've done 200 houses in Peel, so I've still got nearly 2,000 to do. There's a lot to do, but I wanted to sample Peel and find out, what sort of opinions, were they different from Glenfarber, or were they the same, same sort of aspirations, and it's been an interesting
so
exercise.
What have you found out? I mean, obviously, Glenfarber is a big rural constituency, a lot of farming. You've got Peel, which is a cosmopolitan area, so what have you found out?
It is indeed, but there is, as I said in my earlier interview, a synergy between the two. There's a lot of people related to people in St John's and Peel. Obviously, the agricultural side of it is different, and that is very different, because there is no agriculture at all, as you rightly point out, in Peel. But I think aspirations for the island as a whole and the economy and the future are very similar.
There's fishery in Peel, of course, which is a sort of agriculture of the sea, really, isn't it?
Well, it comes within DEFA, where I've been seated for the last 10 and a half months, yes.
How have the farmers taken to you in Glenfarber?
Difficult to tell with farmers. Let's put it like this, they're polite and they listen and they ask questions. And I have done my best whilst in DEFA, whilst not having a farming brief, more of a production and value-added brief. I have had some contact, and obviously within the constituency I talk to farmers. There are concerns, and I've listened and I've tried to address them where I can.
Mostly, sir, centred on this countryside care scheme, which is fairly complicated, and the history needs to be known by the MHK as well. Do you feel you're confident enough to know the background to this?
I know some of it, yes, because I own a farm, and whilst we don't farm hands-on...
What, here?
In the Isle of Man, yes, right. Yes. So I let my land, and my tenant farmer, who is a friend indeed, visits me on occasions and gives me thorough briefings on the farmer's side of things. The schemes have been uncertain, gone from production to environment, and there's a lack of clarity and certainty, and I think we need to revisit the whole thing. I know recently we passed in Tynwald a new grant scheme that broadens grant aid that's available, but farmers need to know where they're going for years to come, not it keep changing.
You've been to that cathedral of agriculture, the meat plant, to have a look round. That is a complex problem as well. And basically, the thinking in some areas is it's just too big for the island.
Well, I made it a priority to go to the meat plant, in fact, the creamery and Ramsey Bakery as well, to find out what's going on. And when I visited the meat plant, they've obviously spent quite a lot of money of late bringing it up to standard. And when you say it's too big, if you're starting from scratch, I think you would build a smaller meat plant.
But the size, so it is too big?
Well, no, the size of the meat plant doesn't really determine that much the running cost. It's the staffing and the machinery and the equipment that's
in the meat
plant.
That's all to do with the building being too big, isn't it?
But a building being too big can add a small layer of extra cost, but it's not a large layer of extra cost. Now, I was in Jersey a few weeks ago, at the Commonwealth conference there, and I was talking to Jersey politicians and those from Guernsey as well, and they have similar problems with their meat processing, and they see that as a strategic asset, and as far as I could determine, they subsidise it in the same way as we do. Now, I think we're going to have to bite the bullet somewhere along the way. We want it to be as efficient as possible, but we've got to view it as a strategic asset to the island and try and persuade farmers, perhaps Brexit offers us some tools to do that, to use the meat plant rather than send stock across.
But if they can get more, and farmers are pragmatic people, and we heard a whole herd of sheep went across from Ellerslie not so long ago, if they can get more by sending them off the island, they'll do it, won't they?
I have no objection to that at all. That's why we need to make the meat plant work for Isle of Man.
They need
producers.
More money, basically, don't they?
Well,
you have to match what's happening across.
I wasn't going to get into Brexit at the moment, but let's start on Brexit. Brexit, if it happens, gives us an opportunity to revisit things like derogation and see whether we can protect our local producers. Now, if we protect local producers, at the situation, we have an absurd situation where 80% of the meat we produce is exported from the meat plant or elsewhere, and 80% of the meat we eat on the Isle of Man, and I'm talking about red meat here in particular, is imported, and some 50 or 60% of that goes through our large supermarket Tesco's, who actually sell no local meat at all. Now, with Brexit and maybe some compulsion, we can perhaps direct some of that production to Tesco's and get more meat purchased locally.
You're putting a question mark over whether Brexit will happen. We're on the way, aren't we?
Well, we are, but
it's going to happen. We have to accept that.
I suspect it will happen, but there's a lot of speculation. I was watching the BBC again this evening before I came out, and the BBC talks as though it's such a bad thing and it's still not going to happen. So I think it will happen. Yeah. I think it would be absolutely incredibly foolish if the UK politicians don't do what the electorate have told them to do.
You're not suggesting it's like Bobby in Dallas. We might wake up and find in the shower and find...
No, I'm not suggesting that
it was all a bad dream or something.
No. I don't think it's necessarily a bad dream either, so...
Talking about what you've done in the 10, 11 months, one of the things that you cited as an achievement was that in Foxdale, the roadworks there. Was that all down to you, was it?
Well, I went in with the ambition to get the work underway. It's been outstanding for years.
So
and
it was
years.
Down to you, was it?
I beat my way to Mr. Gorn's door, and I said that I was going to ask a question in the first Timworld as to whether they would fund or put the capital programme the road works, and he indicated that he would. I asked a question and he indicated positively that it would be in this year's capital programme, and sure enough it was. He wryly said to me instantly 2 months ago, he said, you know, Geoffrey, it's going to start in September just before the election.
Which is useful. What's wrong with the road?
It's a bit of
traffic calming measure, having a bumpy road, isn't it?
It's an absolute mess. It's subsiding. It's causing problems for residents on either side. The whole road or building shake when lorries go through. It's shot.
It's going to have to be widened, isn't it?
No, it won't be widened. There may be some improvement to the pavements, but basically it's road improvement, drainage improvement, and not only will it look better, but it will perform better for the next 30 or 40 years.
You're a member of the Economic Development Department, DED. What's your view of the Vision 9 affair?
I think DED is a bad acronym. It's a bit like DEFA. The Vision 9 affair, I haven't been involved in directly. Obviously, as
you
a member...
with a great relief, I would imagine.
Well, there are things, you know, obviously going on in the background at the moment to which I'm not...
So it was nothing to
totally
do with you? You weren't involved?
No, it was not one of my delegations at a departmental level. I heard about what was going on and about the ambitions for Vision 9, but in no way have I had anything to do with the actual process.
What do you think of Vision 9? What do you think of this mess?
Well, I don't know what to think, to be honest. Looking in from the outside, and also with information that may be confidential, and I'm certainly not going to talk about things that I've gleaned from within the department.
You can tell us a few confidential things if you
really
want.
No, I can't. I think there's a few listeners out there somewhere.
It
is turning into a bit of a debacle, and sadly, I think DED will be running DED will be running the TT next year from the way things are going.
Should that be the sound of the minister's head bouncing down the corridor?
Well, yes and no. I've got to be very diplomatic here, haven't I?
Yes and no. That is
well,
about as diplomatic
Within DED, I think the problems were solved. I think it is elsewhere that there are roadblocks, but that's probably as much as I'm going to say.
The inference is that the other departments made life difficult.
Well, that, probably the inference, yes.
Can I just quote you something from your manifesto for 2015? Before the last election, the UK Justice Committee reported on the Crown dependencies, reported they found undue interference with our affairs. To quote, it's the informality of this process together with these rather broad responses which leads us to suspect the UK government does indeed influence Ireland legislation at policy level. This seems a rather paternalistic approach to Ireland legislation. Now, you've been in the machine for 11 months. Is that, in fact, you were talking then outside the machine? Is that in fact the case? Is that what happens?
Sadly, I'm still outside of the machine because I have not been at Council of Ministers level and I haven't been in the departments where they're dealing directly with the Home Office or
you
whatever.
You must get some feeling of it.
I think there is a lot of influence from the UK, and it's certainly, when you look at things that we adopt, even in my short time there, EU, UK regulation, legislation does flow over us. How that is put to us at higher level, I'm not sure because I'm not there yet, John, so I can't comment constructively on that.
Did you feel impotent?
No, not all the time. But it is frustrating at times when I see things happening. If I'm re-elected, maybe I will move up the slippery pole and I'll be able to report further to you in due course.
Well, if Glenfermline is a great big rural area, you've got Peel there, but Peel surely will dominate this new constituency.
Well, I would say that about two-thirds of the electorate are in Peel, so I have to do a selling job with Peel, and Peel and Peel, rest assured that I'm going to do that.
But won't the focus go on to Peel? Because it is the important, the focus in the middle of the constituency.
When you say focus, I think, you know, when you're elected as a constituent MHK, you deal with everyone's problems on a constituency basis, whether they're Peel or Glenfeber agricultural orientated. So I'm up for that challenge. But if you're talking about national politics, yes, you have to deal with national politics. And I don't think there is any problem or conflict between what people in Peel or Glenfeber require.
Interesting, if I can quote again from your manifesto, elected politicians would do well to interfere less in the minutiae and concentrate more on policy and strategy. Does that mean that you see yourself more as a national politician than perhaps a commissioner, if I put it that way, which have been in the past, dealing with that sort of stuff?
I'm only too aware that you have to deal with everything. If you don't deal with the local issues, you're never going to get re-elected. And it's most important that you maintain contact with your constituents. I like to feel that when it comes to dealing with the commissioners and what have you, I facilitate, help where necessary. And I've had a reasonable relationship, particularly with Patrick commissioners. I'll feed stuff to them. They will deal with it. If they can't deal with it, I will deal with it, and that's how it should work. That is important. When it comes to policy and national politics, yes, MHK should look at things on a national level, but where does national start? Highways are DOI. That's a national matter. The countryside, the environment.
That's the whole issue rather than individual stretches of road in your constituency.
Yes, but it's very important. They are national issues because we take Foxdale, for instance. Large capital funding required, a big project. That is a national project. That's coming from national capital expenditure. And the policy, the way we maintain our roads, is also important because at the moment it seems to me that we have concentrated on the strategic routes, but I go around the constituency, both in Peel and Glenfeber, and I look at the roads and I think to myself, well, we spent £473,000 on the slot, when perhaps if that had been split into 10 or 15 £20,000 or £30,000 units and spent on some of the minor roads, we may have got a better result. So nationally, it's a national policy.
What about millions on the promenade?
Well,
that's put off for another bit longer.
I find that very frustrating, and already spent about £500,000. And I'm coming round to the view that with the horse tram debate, and I backed Bill Malarkey's amendment, and in fact, I was going to bring one forward myself, because I think if we cut the line in half, the heritage transport aspect of the horse trams just vanishes. As we're not quite sure where the horse trams are going, and at the moment, sort of throwaway remark from Minister Gorn, we can't have the track in the middle of the road because the horses will be facing oncoming traffic. Well, I thought that had been happening for the last 100 years. I'm not sure where the line's going to go.
And it's on the seaward side where the cars are now,
yes,
aren't they?
Exactly. That's what I think it's going to do. And I don't think traders, businesses and residents are going to be very happy about losing or sterilising a lot of
parking. Do you think the promenade should go ahead because the promenade is in a terrible state?
Well, I've talked to people about this, and officers in particular, and they tell me, the engineers, that you know, if it isn't dug up properly, any resurfacing scheme won't last. But when I look at the possible cost of 29, probably 30, it'll probably be 35 million by the time we've finished, the way government capital projects overshoot, would it not be better to take the top off the present promenade, leave the railway, the tram tracks where they are, resurface it? Okay, I'm told that probably only lasts for 10, 15 years, but by then we'll know where we're going with the horse trams, and we can see whether the economy is a little bit better.
And you'll be drawing your pension by then, won't you, as an MHK?
Yes, but just think of the saving. It would cost maybe 8 or 10 million instead of 30 million.
Just go on to the job of being an MHK. You were indignant at a comment, I'm quoting it here, about MHKs should have more to do. You feel from your 11 months that they have quite enough to do, presumably.
I was, rather. When I heard that from a prospective candidate, I thought perhaps he ought to talk to a few MHKs and find out what really happens. I think there is a view that people turn up on a Tuesday. We finish by midday sometimes with the keys. We may do a full day or 2 days for Timbrell Court, and then we all go home. It just doesn't happen like that. I could fill my whole week, 7 days a week, with the things to do at the constituency level, department level, select committees, and obviously the parliamentary.
But you want to go on. You enjoy the work.
I enjoy it, yes. It's great. It's a real challenge.
Well, speaking of challenges, who do you think should be Chief Minister? Who has impressed you so far as a putative leader of man?
John, I thought you were going to ask me that. And about 150 people so far while I've been canvassing have been asking me the same question. So I'm rhetorical on that, and I ask them who they think might make the best
But
Chief
I'm
Minister.
Asking you. I mean, obviously a leader is needed from somewhere now that Annabella stepped
John,
on
it
side.
Is very difficult for me to make a decision. When I entered the Keys, I looked around and I made acquaintances with the new members. And within 2 months, I discovered their weaknesses or strengths. And
but as you were sitting there in Timbald this last session, 3 days, you think that, yes, he's got a bit about him, or she's got a bit about her. She could make a good leader.
I will reserve my comments, as we say in Timworld.
Well, we're a bit at sea with that, so let's go to the sea. And you say the steam packet is not the demon it is painted to be. Do you think people really think of the steam packet as a demon?
There is definitely...
That's your own word, by
yes,
the way.
Yes, yes, yes. No, I'm happy with that word, because there is definitely a legacy prejudice against the steam packet. And I understand that, because I entered Timworld with that prejudice, the debt loading, poor service, poor websites, high cost. But when you start to analyse it, and I can tell you we spent a lot of time analysing
this. I should say you're on the Strategic Sea Services
Group. Yes.
So
sorry,
for your sins, they put you straight onto that group.
Yes, yeah. Well, that was another Minister Gorn. I asked him whether I could go on that, and he acceded to that. Yes, by the time we'd gone through the whole process and looked at alternative operators, corporatisation or buying the steam packet, and all the options that were on the table, and then the steam packet came up with their new user agreement offer, as it were, I thought that the offer that they made, with some tweaking and renegotiation on break clauses and probably on price structuring and things like that, was not a bad offer. We're going to get a new vessel, maybe two new vessels. We've got backup capacity. They've entered into commitments on lower fares, special offer fares. And I don't want to sound as if I'm selling the steam packet, yep. But we have to realise that the steam packet serves a population of just 85,000 people. We are not a channel crossing.
But there has been the feeling the steam packet has been leading the island by the nose.
Well, some people have that, and you know, the demon comes out there. But I think of late they have got better. There is a realism. The debt's been parked. Some people are worried that
birthed, I think. Rather than
sorry,
parked. Birthed. Well, rather
that
than
would
parked.
That be appropriate. So, in the whole, I think it's not a bad offer.
Are we going to end up with the steam packet?
Well. I don't know, because an amendment brought by Alf Cannon and various others...
But just personally, would you like us to see end up with the steam package?
If the package that is on the table at the moment can be refined and our lawyers can make that into a contract that is binding, I think we're on the right track. And we have to remember that we're contracting for a service here. So if we have appropriate break clauses and they don't perform, then we can break the contract and we can... deal with other parties or take over the vessels. We will eventually, within a short while, 2 or 3 years, own both sides of the crossing, as it were.
Yeah, there's that's a controversy as well, as about the site that we're actually buying into, whether in fact that will be adequate, whether the infrastructure will be adequate for people to get from the ship into Liverpool and into the UK.
I've been down to look at it personally when I was in Liverpool recently. It's a good site.
Can you do that? I mean, is it not fenced off? You can
I looked at it from the Liver building.
Oh, right, so that's a fair distance.
Yes. But you can see where it is, and it will be a little bit further to walk into Liverpool city centre.
Can you catch buses?
I suspect that there will be some buses available. I didn't go and check the bus service.
We're talking about some days which are pretty grim over there. You don't want to have to move too far to get transport.
Well, I think there will be transport available. Obviously, you create a demand if you have a service coming in, so the demand will create the service.
You but I think that LegCo should take a more scrutiny role, not have a veto on legislation. They don't actually have a veto on legislation. They can hold things up at the moment. But if they, for instance, vote against something and it can come back again as a combined vote. So they can't actually do away with it, can they?
Well, they have had a tendency to stop things in their tracks.
It's different from actually doing away with the measure. They can slow things down.
But it's very frustrating. We as elected politicians should be the ones that bring policy forward and legislation forward. I would like to see the MLCs have more of a scrutiny function, from what I understand.
But no vote at the end of the day? No vote on legislation?
No, I don't think they should. I think they should make recommendations.
They should sit there on the upper shelf looking wise, but not vote at the end of it.
Well, maybe they should do that. It's something for the future, isn't it? I think, you know, Lord Lisvain sets a sort of a scene, and scrutiny is one of those things. I think a lot of his findings I don't agree with completely, and I think I'm not sure whether the report was already written before he took evidence, because I've never known anyone produce a detailed report like that in 4 or 5 weeks.
It's possible that he's just a gifted reporter.
I hope that's the case.
The benefits question. You say who should receive a helping financial hand and much and how much? Not means testing for means testing's sake. So when do we means test?
Well, it is very difficult, isn't it, with means testing? I mean, there's been this idea that we should means test people in social housing. Well, you have to be careful about unexpected consequences. If you start means testing people and charging people more rent if they live in social housing, that is a disincentive to progress their career and get better jobs, because they'll see their rent.
So more increase. Social aspects should be taken into consideration.
I think we've got to be careful where we go with means testing.
Can I just put in one last question, the pensions question? You see no more final salary schemes and managing the present deficit. The question is, how do we manage the present deficit? You have 30 seconds to answer.
The present deficit is running, not just in pensions, but in current account at £85 to £95 million. That has to be faced down by either more economic growth, more economies. It's a priority, because we cannot carry that
deficit.
There's
no direct formula you feel that can answer this. One or two people put forward formulas.
Well, I don't think there's ever a formula. I think that economic growth is key to everything. And at the end of the day, if we have more people earning money, paying into schemes, paying national insurance and tax, there will be more money to pay into everything.
Geoffrey Boot, standing in the constituency of Glenferber and Peel, thank you very much for joining us this evening. This has been continuing coverage of the 2016 general election. I'm John Moss. Good evening.
Keep up to date with the latest House of Keys general election 2016 coverage on manxradio.com.